This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
Here we enlighten you with ayahs 261 and 262 from the Surah Baqara, recited by Ali Parhizkar.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. مَثَلُ الَّذِينَ يُنْفِقُونَ أَمْوَالَهُمْ فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ كَمَثَلِ حَبَّةٍ أَنْبَتَتْ سَبْعَ سَنَابِلَ كَمَثَلِ حَبَّةٍ أَنْبَتَتْ سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة مئة حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة مئة حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the most gracious, the most compassionate. The parable of those who spend their property in the way of Allah is as the parable of the grain growing 7 years, with 100 grains in every ear. And Allah multiplies for whom He pleases, and Allah is ample giving, knowing.
As for those who spend their property in the way of Allah, then do not follow what they have spent with reproach or injury. They shall have their reward from their Lord, and they shall have no fear, nor shall they grieve.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iran imposes sanctions on over a dozen U.S. individuals and entities for human rights violations inciting violence and economic terrorism. North Korea demands an end to military drills by the South and the U.S. vowing more powerful measures in response to Washington's provocations. And a Democratic senator calls for a probe into Saudi Arabia's ownership of Twitter shares and its implications for the U.S. national security. Many thanks for joining us. Iran has imposed sanctions on a number of American individuals and entities for offenses including human rights violations and supporting terrorism. Iran's foreign ministry says they were also sanctioned for interfering in Iran's internal affairs, instigating violence and riots in the country, and committing economic terrorism against the Iranian nation. 10 individuals and 4 entities are on the blacklist. They include the commander of the U.S. Central Command, the U.S. Deputy Secretary of the Treasury, the CIA, and the U.S. National Guard. Over the past few weeks, the U.S. and its allies have imposed several rounds of sanctions on Iran over what they call a crackdown on anti-government protests. Iran dismisses the allegations, saying it's dealing with foreign-backed riots. North Korea has called on the United States and South Korea to stop their joint large-scale military drills. It's a warning that the war games are a provocation that may draw more powerful follow-up measures. The foreign ministry said the situation on the Korean Peninsula has entered a serious confrontation phase due to, quote, reckless U.S.-South Korea military moves. The ministry warned that Washington and Seoul have to take the blame for all the consequences if they do not stop their military exercises all at once. The U.S. and South Korea began one of their largest joint military air drills on Monday. The operation will run until Friday and will feature about 240 warplanes. Washington and Seoul say Pyongyang may be about to resume testing of nuclear bombs for the first time since 2017, and that's why they are holding the drills. Pyongyang, however, views the drills as a rehearsal for an invasion. China slams the U.S. decision to deploy nuclear-capable bombers to Australia, warning such moves undermine regional peace and stability.
The relevant practices of the U.S. side have increased tensions in the region, seriously undermined regional peace and stability, and may trigger an arms race in the region. China urges the parties concerned to abandon the old Cold War zero-sum mentality and narrow geopolitical concepts and do more to contribute to regional peace and stability and to enhance mutual trust.
The spokesman also said that defense and security cooperation between countries should not target third parties. Washington reportedly plans to deploy 6 52 bombers to an airbase in northern Australia, it reports cited. The Air Force has saying that the move is a show of Washington's ability to project air lethal air power against adversaries. Meanwhile, the development is expected to further fuel tensions between China and Canberra. China considers all plans by the U.S. to expand its military power in the Pacific as provocative and part of attempts to contain China's military. A Democratic U.S. senator is calling for an investigation into continued Saudi ownership of Twitter shares following Elon Musk's takeover of the social media company. Chris Murphy says he wants a probe into the national security implications of the purchase. He added that the Saudis have a clear interest in repressing political speech and the U.S. should be concerned that they are Twitter's second largest owner. Murphy asked the Committee on Foreign Investment to conduct a probe. That's a powerful Treasury-led committee that reviews transactions for national security concerns. Saudi billionaire Al-Walid bin Talal and the Kingdom holding companies say they will continue their ownership of Twitter shares. The decision comes as Saudi Arabia has long been under international community spotlights over its flagrant violation of human rights and continuous crackdown on freedom of expression. Russian President Vladimir Putin has held a trilateral summit with the leaders of Armenia and Azerbaijan in the wake of tensions between the two ex-Soviet neighbors. In a joint statement after the talks, Baku and Yerevan agreed not to use force to resolve their dispute over the Nagorno-Karabakh territory. They also agreed to settle all disputes solely on the basis of the recognition of mutual sovereignty and territorial integration. Marina Kartanova reports from Moscow.
Russian President Vladimir Putin hosted the leaders of Armenia and Azerbaijan in an attempt to help the two ex-Soviet states settle their long-standing conflict. Putin said he's hopeful that the summit will make it possible to outline steps to resolve the Nagorno-Karabakh issue, adding the Armenian leadership has the political will to resolve the conflict with Azerbaijan. Putin, however, noted Moscow does not impose anything on anyone and only offers a peaceful solution.
I know that you have the political will for this, and we support it in every possible way. We must find the key points that will allow us to move forward. This conflict has been going on for decades, so we still need to end it sometime.
Armenian Prime Minister Nikol Pashinyan reacted to Putin's remarks, voicing his readiness to accept Moscow's offer to establish diplomatic relations with Baku. Azerbaijan President Ilham Aliyev also said that the Karabakh conflict has already become history and it is time to talk about the normalization of relations between Yerevan and Baku. He expressed gratitude to Russia for trying to resolve the issue. Some experts believe the U.S. and some European countries, particularly France, are trying to foment discord between Armenia from Russia, reform their friendly relations to hostility, withdraw Armenia from the CSTO, and encourage Yerevan for a new large-scale military conflict with Azerbaijan.
France is actively intervening in the conflict. NATO's interests are visible behind it. The USA has one of its largest embassies in Yerevan, the same with Azerbaijan. There goes Israel and the UK. The latter is one of Turkey's closest friends. Another block of countries is being formed there, but they all work in the same direction. They are opposed to the participation of Iran and Russia in resolving this conflict and are trying to replace the participation of neighboring states with that of Western ones. This deprives the people of Armenia and Azerbaijan of a peaceful solution.
A six-week war between Azerbaijan and Armenia in 2020, which claimed the lives of more than 6,500 troops on both sides, ended with a Russian brokered deal that saw Yerevan cede swathes of territory that it had controlled for several decades. Last month, 286 people from both sides were killed in the flare-up of new clashes.
Moscow's task is to find ground for compromise. The interference of Turkey, France, Britain and the United States in the Armenian-Azerbaijani relations in recent months, the so-called Western Peace Project may simply threaten the disappearance of Nagorno-Karabakh. Most experts believe the mediation of such countries is a trap from which there is no way out. Marina Kartunova, Moscow.
Ukraine says the latest Russian missile strikes have caused sweeping blackouts and water supplies in the capital Kiev. It says the bombardment was one of the most massive shellings of Ukrainian territory by the Russian army. Our correspondent Johnny Miller now joins us from Sevastopol, Crimea, to tell us more.
Yes, on Saturday there was an apparent Ukrainian attack on the Russian Black Sea fleet, part of which is situated, and it's increasingly becoming clear that that attack is having increasing far-reaching consequences. Vladimir Putin saying that in part the huge strikes in Kiev and around Ukraine in the last couple of days have been in response to the attack on the fleet. Also, perhaps more importantly, the attack on the fleet is being used by Russia as a reason for discontinuing its involvement in the grain deal. Of course, the grain deal organized with Turkey, allowing foreign ships to export grain from Ukraine. Ukraine, a huge wheat producer, of course, across the world. And most of this grain has not been going to poor countries, but instead to the European Union. And of course, in the European Union, we're having a huge cost of living crisis, energy bills skyrocketing, food prices going up, in large part due to the sanctions on Russia and European policy on Ukraine. We're already starting to see some dissent in European streets, and Russia will be hoping that due to rising prices, there may well be more dissent from European people. Of course, some European leaders have already lost their jobs in recent months, in part due to the cost of living crisis policy on Ukraine and Russia. And Russia will be hoping that, especially as winter comes, more European governments may start to think that continuing to support Ukraine and sanctioning Russia may not be in the best interests of their people. And last night I spoke to a contact of mine who is from Kiev. She told me that the situation for Kiev residents is becoming more and more difficult. The mayor, Vitaly Klitschko, of course, says that 80% of people in Kiev no longer have running water due to these Russian strikes. So in the future, we may well start to see more refugees leaving Ukraine, fleeing, which in turn may well put more policy on European government, more pressure on European governments. So this war not only being fought on the battlefield, but also to influence public opinion and to pressure European governments to change their policy on Ukraine.
Tony, thank you so much for your update. I really appreciate it. The Russian president is now calling on Ukraine to guarantee the safety of Black Sea traffic after Moscow suspended participation in a UN-brokered grain shipment deal. Vladimir Putin accused Kiev of using the shipping corridor for an attack on Russia's Crimea fleet. The Russian Defense Ministry also called on the UN to obtain the required guarantees from Ukraine. Moscow says the decision to halt the implementation of the deal was prompted by Ukrainian drone attack on Russian ships in Crimea. Kiev has dismissed the allegations as a false pretext. Russia's move has also angered Ukraine's Western allies. The US has also called the move purely outrageous. The EU and the NATO have asked Russia to reverse the decision. The Western military alliance urged Russia to stop, quote, weaponizing food. Russia is accusing Western countries of trying to recruit its diplomats in the Netherlands. It has summoned the Dutch ambassador to convey strong protests over the, quote, unacceptable move. The Russian Foreign Ministry says a UK spy attempted to recruit the military attaché of Russia's embassy in The Hague late last month. The ministry said Western secret services, including the CIA, have attempted several similar provocations in the Netherlands in recent years. Moscow said the Netherlands had also taken part in the plots. Relations between Russia and the West have severely deteriorated after Moscow launched a war in Ukraine. Western countries have since imposed sanctions on Moscow and expelled hundreds of Russian diplomats, accusing some of spying. Russia has retaliated by sending home Western diplomats. Tensions grow between the EU and US over trade-related matters. Brussels claims measures introduced by Washington fight inflation will damage EU firms. There is also growing disquiet over the price of the American charging the EU for its gas. Jerome Hughes reports from Brussels.
Importing liquefied natural gas from the US is costing the EU a fortune, and leaders across the 27-nation bloc are looking for a better deal. EU trade ministers met on Monday. They are also not happy with Joe Biden's Inflation Reduction Act. It includes state aid for American manufacturers that will put EU car builders at a disadvantage.
I will be pretty frank. I think in the form how it was presented, I think for the European Union is unacceptable.
This is all happening due to Western sanctions against Russia. Inflation is out of control. We've asked the European Commission why it's not trying to broker peace between Russia and Ukraine.
It just seems to be not on the agenda at all. Am I completely off the mark in that regard?
We have always said that whoever can use its influence to stop the war in Russia and to make to stop the war in Ukraine, we will support this.
EU trade ministers accuse Russia of using food as a weapon after Moscow left a UN-negotiated deal to facilitate grain shipments from Ukraine. It follows drone attacks on Russia's Black Sea fleet near Sevastopol on Saturday. The Kremlin blames Kiev, helped by British experts. Eurozone inflation has climbed to a new record high of 10.7%. EU leaders are being urged to tackle a growing social crisis in the bloc.
It is in the hand of the decision makers because it is very easy to solve this problem. And it is a shame for the European Union and for the member states.
Many claim the West could have prevented the war in Ukraine by listening to Russia's security concerns surrounding the issue of NATO expansion. Massive public protests are forecast as wages in the EU fail to keep up with soaring inflation. Already here in Belgium, police have agreed to hold a one-day strike on the 9th of November. The country's firefighters have announced they will do the same in December. A date for that has yet to be announced. It's set to be a winter of discontent for EU governments. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
The death toll from the collapse of a pedestrian suspension bridge in Western India has risen to 137. The Indian Prime Minister expresses sadness over the tragedy in his home state and says rescue operations are ongoing. Most of those who died were women, children or the elderly. The death toll is expected to rise as rescuers are combining through the river to find the missing ones. More than 177 people have been rescued so far. Police say 9 people associated with the company have maintained the bridge have been arrested. Hundreds of people were on the bridge when it collapsed on Sunday. The bridge was overcrowded as people had come there to celebrate Diwali or the Festival of Light. The structure had only reopened to the public last week after undergoing renovation. It was originally built during the British rule in the 19th century. Our New Delhi correspondent Munawar Zaman says building and other structural collapses is very common in India.
It is a very tragic incident. Still, they are conducting the cleanup operations, and they have rescued some 180 people, and the rescue operation is still going on, and the NDRF team, the disaster management team, they're all coordinating with each other, trying to find out if more bodies will be recovered. And of course, it is expected that more people are still missing, and the death toll could probably mount. And this tragedy has happened just before the state goes for polls in next year, in February. So there's a lot of political battle going on in the country, everybody blaming each other. But yes, we can imagine the bridge was given a contract for just mere 20 million Indian rupees, which is just something to worry about, that such a huge bridge that is a tourist attraction, given such a small amount of money, but at the same time, the contractor subcontracting the same contract to other company. Well, this is something major problem in India, and this happens. India has a phenomenal record about these building collapses. Even when we speak yesterday, there was a building collapse in Mumbai where 4 or 5 people died and some were critically injured. So construction has always been an issue in the country of more than a billion people, and there is no drastic step or critical measures that could be taken to prevent it.
Well, those were the top stories for this hour. Many thanks for joining us.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
Supplication on Tuesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, and praise is his right, since him deserves it abundant praise. I seek refuge in him from the evil of my soul, for surely the soul commands to evil except as my Lord has mercy. I seek refuge in him from the evil of Satan, who adds sins to my sin. I seek protection with him from every wicked tyrant and unjust sovereign and conquering enemy. O Allah, place me among thy troops are the victors, and place me in thy party, for thy party are the ones who prosper. And place me among thy friends, for thy friends no fear shall be upon them, nor shall they sorrow. O Allah, set right for me my religion, for it is the preserving tie of my affair. Set right for me my hereafter, for it is the abode of my permanent lodging, and to it I flee from the neighborhood of the vile. Make life an increase for me in every good, and death an ease for me from every evil. O Allah, bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and the completion of the number of the envoys, and his household, the good, the pure, and his household, the good, the pure, and his companions, the distinguished. And give me on the Tuesday three things. Leave no sin for me unless thou forgives it, and leave no grief unless thou takes it away, and leave no enemy, and leave no enemy unless thou repelst him. By means of in the name of Allah, the best of the names, in the name of Allah, Lord of earth and heaven, I seek to repulse every hateful thing, the first of which is his anger, and I seek to attract every lovable thing, the first of which is his good pleasure. So seal me with forgiveness from thee, O patron of beneficence.
In the limelight.
America's deployment of nuclear-capable B-52 bombers to the Royal Australian Air Force Base in Australia's Northern Territories is likely to fuel tensions with China. We have taken a look at some of the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. An expanded Royal Australian Air Force base in the Northern Territories of Australia will have space for up to six American nuclear-capable B-52 aircraft as part of a US-funded project that is likely to fuel tensions with China. Officials in Canberra confirmed that the US-funded aircraft parking apron at the Royal Australian Air Force Base Tyndall, 320 kilometres southeast of Darwin, would be capable of accommodating up to six B-52 aircraft, but said it could also house other aircraft types. They said the project was currently in the design phase and played down the significance of the development, saying, "American bomber aircraft had been visiting Australia since the early 1980s and conducting training in Australia since 2005. But the detailed plans, first reported by ABC on Monday, suggest the new Labor government in Australia has locked in plans initiated under the former coalition government to expand visits to Australia by US aircraft. The B-52 is a long-range heavy bomber that can carry out ocean surveillance and anti-ship operations and can carry nuclear or precision-guided conventional ordnance, according to a US government summary. Four Corners reported the US Department of Defense, the Pentagon, had budgeted $14.4 million for squadron operations and maintenance of facilities at Tyndall. It cited US documents as saying, "The squadron operation facilities required to support strategic operations and to run multiple 15-day training exercises during the Northern Territory dry season for deployed B-52 squadrons." The Minister for Defence Personnel, Matt Keogh, said Australia must remain vigilant amid regional tensions, but he did not think the B-52 rotation plans would inflame tensions with China. The Minister for Defence Personnel, Matt Keogh, said, "I don't think so at all. I think what's really important here is that the more we are able to build interoperability with the Americans, growing on that very strong alliance." America's ambassador to Australia, Caroline Kennedy, avoided commenting directly on the B-52 plans on Monday, but said the United States was determined to support peace and stability throughout this region through diplomacy, dialogue and deterrence. In an interview with ABC News Breakfast, US Ambassador to Australia Caroline Kennedy said the Indo-Pacific was facing increasing tensions and the United States would work with our partners and allies to make this region safe. Former Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison revealed in September of last year that he expected the United States to increase its military presence in the region while Australia awaits nuclear-powered submarines under the AUKUS deal, the first of which were at that stage expected to be ready by late 2030s. Senior ministers Peter Dutton and Maurice Payne held annual talks with their US counterparts in Washington, D.C., a day after the AUKUS announcement, and also flagged plans for more US military deployments to Australia. Senior Minister Peter Dutton said the alliance with the United States must be match fit to meet the strategic challenges ahead and announced greater air cooperation through rotational deployments of all types of US military aircraft to Australia, including strategic bombers. Sky News Australia has also covered the same story, giving us more details. Australia has dismissed outbursts from China over its decision to develop nuclear-powered submarines and flagged plans for more US military deployments in Australia. The Chinese embassy in Canberra has in turn accused the Australian government of sliding further down on the road of harming China-Australia relations and of lacking independence from the United States. Speaking after talks with the Biden administration in Washington, the Australian Defence Minister, Peter Dutton, said the nation was a proud democracy in our region and no amount of propaganda can dismiss the facts. The Australian government also renewed its request to China to resume high-level talks, an offer that the Australian Foreign Minister, Maurice Payne, said mature actors will be prepared to take up. The Australian Defence Minister, Peter Dutton, and Maurice Payne joined their US counterparts for the annual dialogue known as AUSMIN, the first since the Biden administration took office. But it was overshadowed by the fallout from the announcement of the security pact among Australia, United States and the United Kingdom, the AUKUS pact. The deal has resulted in Australia tearing up its $90 billion contract with France for diesel submarines, and will instead see the United States and Britain share sensitive technology with Australia to let it develop its first nuclear-powered submarines. The Chinese government said the extremely irresponsible deal would seriously undermine regional peace and stability. While the tabloid, the Global Times, carried an editorial warning Australia not to act provocatively, or China would certainly punish it with no mercy. The Australian Defence Minister, Peter Dutton, dismissed the reaction from Beijing. Peter Dutton said, "This is not the first time that we've seen different outbursts from China in terms of Australia's position. We stand with our neighbours in the Indo-Pacific to ensure enduring peace, and this collaboration makes it a safer region. That's the reality, and no amount of propaganda can dismiss the facts." A joint statement issued by Australia and the United States criticised China's expansive maritime claims in the South China Sea that are without a legal basis. A Chinese embassy spokesperson rejected the unfounded accusations and erroneous remarks against China by both Australia and the United States. The Chinese embassy spokesperson said this petty move to put pressure on China will be of no avail, but a stage farce.
IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Palestine Declassified.
Hello, I'm Chris Williamson, and this is Palestine Declassified, where we investigate the Israeli regime's global war against solidarity with the illegally occupied people of Palestine. The Marvel film franchise has attracted widespread criticism over its upcoming movie, Captain America: New World Order, because it features a character who's portrayed as a former Mossad operative. In this week's show, we'll be delving into the Marvel controversy and we'll look more broadly at Zionist influence in Hollywood. I'll be speaking to experts to find out more after this special report by Latifa Abou-Chakra on the dissension Marvel's forthcoming film has generated.
A controversy has emerged around the Hollywood juggernaut Marvel Studios as it was announced that its forthcoming film, Captain America 4, would feature the character of an Israeli intelligence agent named Sabra. This has raised concerns not only about Marvel's own historical ties to the Israeli military, but also about the Zionist regime's broader influence in Hollywood. The actor scheduled to play the Sabra character, Shira Hass, originally learnt to act in the Israeli military, where she was part of a theatre group. She also worked with Stand With Us, an Israel lobby group funded directly by the Israeli Prime Minister's office. Stand With Us also founded a cultural arm focused on the music and film industry called Creative Community for Peace, formed by music and film executives to pressure artists and actors to normalize with Israel and shun BDS. Shira Hass is also due to appear in a series called Lioness, playing the character of Israeli Prime Minister Golda Meir and depicting her life in an attempt to beautify her legacy. Marvel has a long history of collaborating with the US military, allowing it to edit scripts for films such as Captain America, First America, Iron Man 1 and 2, The Hulk, and Captain America, amongst many others. What is less known is the extent to which Israeli military figures linked to significant lobby groups have had a role in the company's story. The current chairman of Marvel Entertainment is Isaac Perlmutter. He fought in the Israeli military, occupying the West Bank and Gaza. His family foundation funds the Friends of Israel Occupation Forces, the ADL, and the Jewish Agency for Israel. Perlmutter is also very close to Donald Trump and was often referred to as the shadow of the head of military veterans affairs due to the close advisory role he fulfilled while Trump was president. His wife, Laura Perlmutter, funded Trump's election campaign and was even on his inauguration committee. Avi Arad, current CEO of Marvel Entertainment, also fought in the Israeli military at the same time. Early investors in Marvel Comics, Carl Ishan and Ronald Perelman, are also linked very closely to Israel. Both were included in Benjamin Netanyahu's infamous list of millionaires to be tapped up to fund his election campaign. Perelman's foundation has contributed to several prominent Zionist organizations, including the JNF, which is the largest settlement building organization in Palestine. Perelman is thought to be very close to Donald Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and has a history of donating to Trump's election campaigns. Perelman is also believed to have been close to convicted pedophile, sex trafficker, and likely Israel intelligence asset, Jeffrey Epstein.
I love Donald. I've known Donald for 30 years. I would consider him a good friend of mine. I know his kids. He's got great kids, I think. I think that is one real indication of the man, is to look at the kids that he's raised. And that would show, you know, a great strength and a sense of character that he's got. He does like to talk.
So here we have some background on Marvel and how it could come to glorify Israeli intelligence agents before millions of impressionable young minds.
As always, we're joined by our resident expert, David Miller. David's an academic and former professor at Bristol University and a leading British scholarly critic of Israel. David co-founded and is a co-director of the lobbying watchdog Spinwatch. Our guest expert today is Matt Alford, who joins us from Devon. Matt's an academic and a filmmaker. He's written widely on Hollywood and how it's used for propaganda purposes. His first documentary feature film was the award-winning The Writer with No Hands, which examined a conspiracy theory about the death of a Hollywood screenwriter. Matt's latest documentary, Theatres of War, is based on his co-authored book, National Security Cinema, The Shocking New Evidence of Government Control in Hollywood, that draws on archives and interview gathering trips to Los Angeles and Washington, D.C. Welcome to the show. David, what do you know about this Sabra character then?
Well, this is a character which has been in the Marvel comics for some considerable time, but this is the first time that she's been in a film, which is still to come out. And it's a Mossad operative, former Mossad operative. It's said that in response to the criticism that there's been over this, that they've rolled back a little bit on the representation, and they are now supposed to be showing that she is drawn by one of the other superheroes to see the effects of Israeli aggression on a Palestinian child. And this makes her more thoughtful about the human rights abuses that might be carried out by the Zionists. Mm. So there's an attempt to sort of soften the image of the Mossad superhero, if you like, and to show that there are some criticisms permissible of the Zionist state, but only some. And that, of course, is the point here.
Yeah. I mean, Matt, I mean, are these connections between Marvel and Israel significant, do you think? And what do you make of it?
Well, I certainly know that the connection between the Department of Defense and the CIA and Marvel are significant. I'm less knowledgeable about the links with Israel. But you've got to remember that the United States is such a massive industrial entertainment juggernaut that it dwarfs any other nation's ability to control media. And that's particularly the Department of Defense, which can rewrite scripts extensively and has done. The one of the headline findings that we've had is that, you know, there are perhaps 10,000 different products that have been affected over the past century, but with a huge escalation over the past 25 years in terms of cooperation with the U.S. military industrial complex, if you also include organizations like the FBI. It's really quite a shocking amount of control that is exercised by the American security state.
Interesting. Well, tell us a bit more about the relationship then between the United States military and Hollywood.
Well, the US military has quite a lot of power over Hollywood producers because they can offer things like aircraft carriers and Black Hawk helicopters and a lot of advice and just long-standing links in all sorts of different ways, so that they can exercise leverage over many, many scripts. And this happens, as you've already stated in your report, this happens on a lot of the Marvel films, but also over things like Transformers, and basically almost any film that you ever see the military in the script has been combed through by the US military. It also often happens with the CIA as well, although to a much lesser extent, but still on very prominent products, such as the film depicting the search for Osama bin Laden, for example. And then there are other films as well, which may not have actually had Department of Defense or CIA or FBI support, but nevertheless still, and these are in some ways perhaps the most interesting films of all, films that haven't actually had script rewrites, but are still ideologically aligned to state interest. And that's it's interesting when that happens. I mean, in the case of Representations of Israel, an interesting one from many years ago is the Spielberg film Munich in 2005, which did something, I guess, similar to what David's talking about in this new Marvel film, which I've not yet seen, so I won't comment on in any great detail. Yeah. But Munich did something similar in that it was softening Israel's image by showing the humanity of the people who were involved in an assassination program against Palestinians. Now, does that, you know, how you want to interpret that as a political product is up to you. But it's certainly, if you are humanizing people who are doing illegal things, in the same way as if you are humanizing American soldiers in Vietnam, you take that as you will.
Yes, yes. I mean, David, I mean, I guess the collaboration between the United States military and Hollywood isn't overly surprising, really. But I mean, what about the way in which the Israeli military is depicted by Hollywood?
Well, I mean, I think you've got to look at this in the round. Of course, what everyone says is that the US is the greatest ally of Israel. That Israel is sort of the lapdog or the Middle Eastern watchdog of US imperialism. And of course, when it comes to the representation of the military, then you'll see the kind of input made by the Department of Defense also having an effect on allied military. So, you know, the US is the leading force in NATO, so British Army and other NATO forces will be more positively represented as a result of those kinds of influences. But the Israeli military, of course, is not widely seen outside Israel as being an overly abusive force. And in terms of the way in which they're represented in films, you don't have much of the way of those representations. But you can see that the way in which, for example, Israeli series, television series, which represent, for example, the CIA, are imported into the West. And there are attempts there to show a kind of a humanized, sanitized version of what the Israelis are up to.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting, though, isn't it, that Marvel produced films like Black Panther, didn't they? Actively aimed at the black community in the US, and yet they've got strong links with Donald Trump within the company. It's a curious sort of comparison there.
Yes, I mean, it's a kind of moderate attempt to bring in a black audience while at the same time not really properly representing either organisations like the Black Panthers or liberation movements in the Global South. Mm. So yeah, it's a sort of calming down of the edges and an attempt to say that actually there's an audience here.
I mean, Matt, I mean, has Hollywood produced many other films that overtly promote intelligence agencies from other countries?
Mainly, I mean, the James Bond series obviously leaps to mind because the MI5 and the Department of Defense has been involved in that series. And that, again, wasn't really known until the 21st century. But they've been involved in at least half of the Bond films, and which has involved script rewrites. They did for instance, they threw out a joke in one of the Bond films about the US losing the Vietnam War, for example. And they also changed the identity of one of the kidnapped admirals to make sure that he wasn't American. They think they made him Russian in the end so that it didn't reflect badly on them. So there's all sorts of promotion of American institutions and by implication and by extension sometimes also MI5. I don't think it happened. I mean, I think American filmmaking, the politicization of American filmmaking tends to be very American, if you like. I mean, they're not really looking to, promote the intelligence agencies of Britain directly or of the French or anything like that. But it tends to be very much more in-house about the representation of the CIA and Department of Defense. And part of the reason for that is that it's not just about propaganda in the normal sense. It's not just about promoting an American view of history. It's also about recruitment. They want to recruit people for the US military and also for the CIA. In fact, one of the reasons that they got involved, the CIA in particular, got involved in filmmaking was because they were underrepresented in terms of diversity, particularly in terms of women, for example, in the 1990s. So they needed to get into that. And that's why they did series with people like actresses, stars like Jennifer Garner, to make products like Alias. And that was to promote women into the agency. So it's more about the American experience. At least from my research, more about the American experience.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot, Matt. Let's just pause there for a moment and have a look at this report on how a cache of leaked Sony emails offer a revealing insight into Zionist influence on Hollywood.
The relationship between Israel and key Hollywood figures was blown open by the WikiLeaks exposure of emails belonging to Sony employees. A litany of lobbying activities was revealed being organized through official company emails. At that time, the Sony Pictures Entertainment CEO, Michael Linton, was revealed to be having dinner with then-Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu at the invitation of famous film producer and Israeli spy Aaron Milchan. Films like Mr. and Mrs. Smith, 12 Years a Slave, Fight Club and Big Mama's House are some of Milchan's best-known works. He has publicly admitted running 30 different companies in 17 countries for Israeli intelligence.
Milchan detailed how he was recruited in the 1960s to Israel's Bureau of Scientific Relations, where he helped gather technology to further Israel's still unacknowledged nuclear program, saying, quote, "I did it for my country and I'm proud of it." Milchan moved to Hollywood in the 1970s, but he suggested his efforts on behalf of the Israeli government didn't end completely. Milchan indicated other big Hollywood players were also involved, saying, quote, "When I came to Hollywood, I detached myself completely from my physical activities to dedicate myself to what I really wanted, filmmaking. But sometimes it gets mixed up."
Former Israeli President Shimon Peres says of Aaron Milchan, Aaron is a special man. It was I who recruited him. When I was at the Ministry of Defense, Aaron was involved in numerous defense-related procurement activities and intelligence operations. His strength is in making connections at the highest levels. His activities gave us a huge advantage, strategically, diplomatically, and technologically. Following his warm meeting with Netanyahu, Michael Linton went on to become the chairman of Snapchat and then Warner Music Group. The emails also reveal a campaign to get legendary British filmmaker Ken Loach banned from the Cannes Film Festival by pro-Israel film producers. Ben Silverman, former co-chairman of NBC Entertainment and Universal Media Studios, and producer of shows such as The Office, argued that Hollywood must boycott Loach for his pro-Palestinian views. Ron Rothals, producer of well-known hip-hop film classics like Paid in Full and State Property, rages in an email to the head of Cannes Film Festival that there is no place for Loach's intolerant and hateful remarks in a global world of film and filmmakers. The campaign against Loach was led by Ryan Kavanagh, CEO of Relativity Media, a company responsible for financing more than 200 movies, who acknowledges meeting with officials at the Israeli embassy to discuss the issue. Perhaps the worst aspect of the emails is the mobilization that takes place to support Israel when it bombed Gaza, killing around 2,400 people in 2014. It included hip-hop legend Russell Simmons asserting that he will begin lobbying for Israel, and the email checks former Israeli commander Kobi Marom inserted into it to assist the rich and famous in their efforts to support Israel.
David, what about the content of those Sony emails that WikiLeaks revealed? Quite interesting, isn't it?
It's pretty extraordinary, isn't it? I mean, when you see attacks on people for alleged anti-Semitism, you often imagine, you know, there must be people behind the scenes talking to each other, but you don't usually get the emails, you don't usually have the leaks. In this case, you have the leaks, you have the email chains with them discussing how to sabotage the possibility of Ken Loach being given an award. I mean, it's really extraordinary. These are people who are not Israel lobbyists, they're not people who are directly members of Israel lobby groups, but they are people who have contacts, there are people with connections to the Israeli intelligence services, there are people who are ideologically aligned, yes, and they speak to each other and they plan and they plot and they get together through emails. And these emails are the evidence of that, that's what they do. This is not something which is made up as a kind of, as a Jewish conspiracy. These are Zionist supporters who collaborate together, and the evidence is in this email cache. And it's really quite instructive to see how that works. And of course, that must be the way it works in many other cases too.
Yes. I mean, Matt, this character, Michael Linton, who was mentioned there, is also on the board of the RAND Corporation, which is a US military think tank. So what do you make of his meeting with Benjamin Netanyahu?
Well, I certainly know that the RAND Corporation has also actually been involved in filmmaking before, including the Hollywood blockbuster film Red Dawn, which was about the Soviet invasion of the United States. That was a 1984 film, but then it was remade in 2012 with the Chinese being the villains, and North Koreans being the villains. So RAND has also been involved in filmmaking, has guided those kind of narratives. So I think that's probably quite instructive for the for what kind of meetings they would have been. It's interesting about Ken Loach. I mean, Ken Loach is about the least hateful person I can think of. He's a very gentle old soul. I often see him down at Bath train station. I've met him and interviewed him briefly at Bath Football Club. He makes all of these, you know, peace-nicked films. He really should not be the subject of that of those kind of attacks. He's a voice for peace.
Yes, no, absolutely. I mean, I've met Ken well, and a lovely guy, and certainly doesn't deserve the opprobrium which has been poured all over him. But David, I mean, what's your opinion of Arne and Milken and his activity for Israel?
Well, again, here's another example of someone who is recruited for the Israeli intelligence services for a very obscure intelligence agency, which is mentioned there, that Bureau of Scientific Services, and who conducts many 30 different operations or 30 different companies he said he was involved in, and then who goes off to do something else. in this case, filmmaking. And he says, but of course, you know, when I was doing filmmaking, the intelligence stuff got a little bit mixed up with that. So the people who are ex-Mossad or ex-Unit 8200, the Signals Intelligence Agency, they're not really always ex. Sometimes they go on and do other stuff because they've got the contacts.
Yes.
And they're perfectly happy in many circumstances to pass on information, to be part of networks, and to have an influence beyond their involvement technically in the intelligence agencies. Now, we've seen in this program many, many occasions when there are people who've been involved previously in either the Israel Defense Forces, the Israeli military, or in their Israeli intelligence firms, companies, and raise the question about whether this is an issue. Well, we know from the Sony case, these are certainly issues.
No, indeed. I mean, Matt, the campaign against Ken Loach that you mentioned there, was ferocious, but ultimately it was unsuccessful. I mean, why do you think that was? Because since then he was expelled from the Labour Party for refusing to denounce people like David and me, actually.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's always a struggle, isn't there? And ultimately, the truth can out. And people like Ken Loach have had a lot of have got a strong constituency of. And also a strong middle class constituency, which, you know, the English middle class is a useful bunch of people to be backing you, I guess. And also he's been working since the 1960s. You know, his first film being Pez, award-winning film, and then a whole series of products. And he's not just a political figure. He is also a cultural figure. So I think that helped. He is part of civilized society and has been a major part of people's lives. So it's an indication that these kind of fights can be won.
No, indeed. And I mean, of course, and that's encouraging that, you know, they're not all powerful. And, you know, it's good to see that, you know, Ken was able to prevail in those circumstances. But finally, David, I mean, I see that the music mogul, Russell Simmons, is hoping to lobby for Israel. I mean, what else do we know about the Israel lobby's activities in the music industry?
Well, we've touched on the Zionist influence in Hollywood today. Earlier in the show, we mentioned the Creative Community for Peace, an organisation set up by the Israel lobby group staff for us, which is involved in the creative community, which means, yes, the film industry and the media industry, and indeed the music industry. In previous shows, we've also looked a little bit at the music industry and the involvement of the Zionists in the music industry, and it's extremely strong influence there, because that many of the big music companies are run by Zionists, and it's an extraordinary thing to say, but they then are engaged directly in things like the Creative Community for Peace, or indirectly they have foundations which fund the Friends of the Israel Defense Forces, the Jewish National Fund, and all sorts of other organizations which are involved in ethnic cleansing in Palestine. So these are significant issues in all the way through the entertainment industry, not just in relation to music and not just in relation to hip-hop.
Well, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there because we are out of time again. And I'd just like to thank David, obviously, as our resident expert for joining us today, and obviously Matt joining us from Devon. Thank you for joining us as well today. And we'll be back next week with more investigations and analysis on Palestine Declassified. So until next time, this is Chris Williamson saying bye for now.
In the limelight.
With the continuation of the crimes of the Israeli regime against oppressed Palestinians in the occupied territories, almost all human rights organizations have acknowledged that these people are facing a racist and apartheid regime that increases its crimes and colonial measures day by day. Recently, some United Nations human rights officials and five former European ministers have labelled Israel as a racist and apartheid regime. We have taken a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The Middle East Monitor has more for us. The United Nations Independent International Commission of Inquiry on the Occupied Palestinian Territories says it will investigate apartheid charges against Israel, stoking serious fears among Zionist authorities that the probe would recognize the regime as apartheid due to its ongoing atrocities against Palestinians. The three members of the commission said during a briefing at the United Nations in New York on Thursday, 27th of October, that future reports will investigate apartheid by Israel. They said the investigation has so far focused on the root causes of the conflict, which they ascribe to Israel's illegal presence in the occupied West Bank. Navi Pillay, a former United Nations human rights chief who chairs the commission, called apartheid a manifestation of the occupation. Navi Pillay said, "We're focusing on the root cause, which is the occupation, and part of its lies, and part of it lies in apartheid." She added, "We will be coming to that. That's the beauty of this open-ended mandate. It gives us the scope." The United Nations Human Rights Council, Human Rights Watch, and other international human rights organizations have accused the Israeli regime of apartheid in the past 2 years.